Great, I'm recording something.
You're recording.
Go ahead, guys.
Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. The chain continues. And this week we watched something that would be, well, it would just be something you wouldn't do on Arrakis. It's a crying Freeman. And it is something. Mark, I'm going to say it's DeCostas, but that's not how you say his name. It's Dacus.
No, it is.
No, it's DeCostas. It's DeCostas. It is
DeCostas. It sounds very similar.
There's lots of A's, C's, S's, and O's. Crying Freeman, a movie, and that's really what it is. It's wild. And as I was watching the end of the movie, I was like, I understand why he showed up in John Wick 3. I was like, that's probably how that connection was made.
Maybe. So. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't really look too much of his other filmography. I think he was in some other, like, action movies in the 80s. I don't know.
He was in, like, a Crow TV show.
Yeah, he was. We've talked about that show a bunch. That show is wild because the Crow has a day job in that show. Like, he literally has a day job.
That's insane.
If you ever want to, like, a laugh, you can probably find it on YouTube. The pilot of that show is basically just a condensed version. It's like a condensed remake of the movie, and it's awful. It's so fucking bad. Because, like, imagine a Crow remake, but, like, made for television with no budget, and you can't curse, and it can't be, like, super violent. It's awful. But no, like, also, Mark DeCostas, wasn't he the second Liu Kang, or am I racist?
I'm looking at his list right now. When did that movie come out? He was in Cradle to the Grave, which did we watch that? We watched Romeo Must Die.
No,
I think
which one we watched. We watched Romeo Must Die.
I don't think he was in any of the...
He wasn't in any of them. Oh, you know what he was in that I'm thinking of? He was in the Double Dragon movie.
He was in the Double Dragon movie.
It was him and the guy from Party of Five, Scott Wolf. Alec, help me out. I'm sure I know you know this guy's name. Yeah, not Matt.
Scott Wolf.
Scott Wolf. Okay. They had a fox and a wolf on that show. Look at that.
He got a. He was
also the first thing under fucking Mark DeCostas's name is what is his ethnicity? It doesn't matter if people cares. Like, why is that the first thing? Jesus Christ!
Well, inquiring minds want to know.
Did you care? Like, I was like,
is this immediately. Guy Chinese? I need to know where everyone's from at all time.
He's Hawaiian, by the way. So
he was in a movie called The Extendables, which is a parody film of The Expendables. He was in Only the Brave, which is not Only the Strong.
No, Only the Brave is a kickboxing movie. I've seen that.
No, it's not. Only the Strong is a kickboxing movie. Only the Brave is about some sort of World War II unit fighting that was made up of Japanese Americans.
No, he was in a movie called Only the Strong, and that's a martial, like, that's a karate movie. I've seen that.
I don't think he's in that, buddy.
I'm looking right at it. It's got him on the cover, dude. I'm, like, looking directly at it.
Oh, yeah, no, he was in Only the Strong.
Yeah, that's what it just says. He's literally on the front of the poster.
But he's also in Only the Brave. He's in both.
I still need to see the last John Woo or John Wick. John Woo. I still need to see
the last John Wick. It was. It kind of made the third one better for me.
He is in Brotherhood of the Wolf. That was directed by Christopher Gantz, who directed, I think, this movie too. I'm pretty sure.
I believe so. Yeah, there was some connection to Brotherhood of the Wolf
recently. Have either one of you ever seen Brotherhood of the Wolf? Because that movie is wild.
Not the whole way through.
It's like a Victorian, like, martial arts werewolf movie, and they all kind of look like Bloodborne characters. I kind of love that movie. Christopher Gantz also directed Silent Hill.
Yeah.
But anyway, Crying Freeman. We'll get into it. It's a movie. I mean, Alec talked about it a little bit in real life, and I already kind of spoiled for Alec my feelings on this movie. This movie is delightfully insane. But we'll get into it. So what y'all? Oh, no, Sean this week because he's got AIDS again. He came back, hit him hard this time.
On him.
He's got a long AIDS, long COVID. Oh. but we wish you well, Sean. Hope you feel better. Anyway, what'd y'all watch this week? I'm gonna start with Gogs because he told me that he watched a bunch of movies. So it's very rare for him to watch a bunch of movies.
Yeah, like I watched three things. Two of them are Miyazaki movies.
Ooh, look at you going through Studio Ghibli.
Trying to get a little culture for your ass.
Did you watch his movies because of all the AI controversy with him lately?
No, I did not. I just watched them because I've always heard things like prior to this, I saw Pompoko, I saw Nausicaa. I did not watch, I missed the episode that we did on Porco Rosso, so I have not seen that.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. I didn't. There's a few like cool moments in that movie, but overall, it's not very good. I was very disappointed in that movie. But you saw Nausicaa, right? Nausicaa was really good. So which ones did you watch now?
So I watched Spirited Away, which I liked.
I like that
it's
movie.
It's very pretty. It's charming. It's, you know, it's kind of quiet and interesting, and it's got some really neat visuals, and you know, it's sort of a neat story about like growing up and, you know, maturing and, you know, becoming your own person, and it's cool. And
yeah, I like that movie a lot.
It's like sort of a, you know, I liked it. And then but then I watched Princess Mononoke.
Oh, that movie rules.
That movie kicks a pile of ass.
Alec, have you seen that? I feel like you'd really like Princess Mononoke.
No, I haven't seen any of them.
You should watch it. I think you'd like that one. And like, I don't know. Did you watch the newer one with like the all-star cast? Because they re-released it in like 2000, and it's got like famous actors as the voice actors.
So everyone that was like, it was like Billy Crudup. It was Gillian Anderson. I mean, it was a pretty, the cast was pretty, like, I'm failing now, but I looked up the names and there were some, Billy Bob Thornton was one of the voices. So it was a pretty stellar, cast. It's a really cool, I mean, if you haven't seen it, like, it's a really cool story about like, technology and nature and like the intersection between, you know, progress as a society versus the impact on nature. And like, it does a very good job of kind of telling the story in shades of gray and not being like very black and white about it. It's beautiful. The characters are cool. Like there's a lot of cool battle scenes and these big, crazy, like nature demons that are awesome. And I don't know, visually, it's just like, it's a really cool story and it's like really well done. And I don't know, of the four Studio Ghibli, is it Ghibli or Ghibli?
I don't know. Just go with whatever. I've heard it said both ways.
Of the four Studio Ghibli films I've seen thus far, it is my favorite by a hefty margin. And I've enjoyed all four of the movies I've watched, but that one is like, it's just a hell of a film, just a hell of a talent. So shout out to Princess Mononoke, which is probably at this point, I don't know, like 25 years old. I forget when it came out. I think it's early 2000s. Yeah. The last thing I watched was last night. Vance and I went to go see Jared Hess's Minecraft.
And wait, Jared Hess made that movie?
Yeah, Jared Hess.
No idea. Movie. I'd have a lot more interest in it if I knew he directed it.
I had a great time with it. Like, it is exactly what it's supposed to be. It is. Well,
it's funny because it's getting really polarizing reviews, but like, knowing Jared Hess is involved, it's probably super fucking weird.
There's a lot of stuff that is like, there was parts of the movie that are very weird and very Jared Hess, where I was laughing out loud so hard, Vance looked at his friend and he was like, is this for like adults? Like, why is this funny? Like, he wasn't laughing at those scenes, but then he was having a, like,
did he like it? I mean, he's a huge,
he loved it. Oh, he loved it. He loved it. He had a great time. And I enjoyed watching it with, like, Momoa's great in it. Jack Black's always a ton of fun. Like, if you know, I think your mileage will vary based on how much Minecraft you know about.
Yeah, I know nothing.
But like, even if you like, I only know about it like tangentially, just from like from being with Vance and like experiencing it with him. But like, him and his friend were like super excited, like whenever certain things popped up or this, that, and the other. But like, I just thought it was funny, just because Jack Black's funny and Jason Momoa was hilarious in it. I thought it's so.
But what is how do the people get into the Minecraft world? What is the overarching plot?
So the story, it opens like it goes bang bang, like the opening of the movie happens like lickety split. It's almost like a little mini movie before the movie. It's Jack Black's like, you know, as a child I always yearned for the mines, but I was told I couldn't go. And so like it shows him as a little kid with like a mining helmet and a pickaxe being shooed away from this mine. And he's like, I always felt like that's where I belonged. And then like one day he like as an old, like as a man, he returned and he just started mining around. And he found this cube and this other thing. He put them together, made a portal into the actual Minecraft overworld. And it follows all of the Minecraft rules. Like you can build shit. He's like, I built my first house. I built my second house. I built this house just out of pink sheep fur, like all this goofy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, Minecraft is weird because it's like a sandbox, but it's also got some lore to it.
Right. And like it started out as like a survival. Good God, TJ.
Yeah. Like it was just like,
But like, you don't even have to play it that way anymore. Right. You can just,
you can play like Vance likes to play creative where he's just like he built like a 200 foot tall skeleton. Like he's just crafting things, but like you can play it like a survival game. So anyway, Jack Black is now living his best life in the overworld, and then he gets captured. He goes to the Nether, which is like the upside down, like it's the bad part of Minecraft. And he gets captured by these like piglin thing. They're enemies in the game, and they basically want to use this cube thing that got him, that portaled him into the world. It'll cause some cataclysm that allowed them to take over the overworld. So he sends his dog away to take the cube and run away. He gets captured and he's held in a dungeon for tens of years. Mm-hmm. And the dog escapes to the real world, hides the cube in like under the bed of his house. And then his house gets foreclosed upon. And then Jason Momoa buys the contents of his house in one of those storage war auction situations. And Jason Momoa is like who is the guy who made the hot sauce and played Donkey Kong? He was like a video game champion in 1989, and that's where he topped.
Oh, wow. Oh, Billy Mitchell. Mitchell.
And that was like and they live in in Idaho, and the town is called Chungus, Idaho, and every time they said the name, I just cracked the fuck up. So he finds this cube, and then this girl and her brother, whose mom just passed away, are moving to Chungus, Idaho to work. She's going to do social media for the potato factory. So they're in town. He meets Momoa. They put the cube together. They show up, and then they link up with Jack Black, and it's an adventure to save the world. It's goofy, but like, I don't know. Jason Momoa is great in this because he's just playing like a very like stereotypical, I peaked in the 80s, like kind of a meathead, but you know, he's playing a uglier can. He's so handsome that it's just funny to see him play such like a down and out loser.
The kid's good. It's hard to believe that guy would ever be a down and out loser.
The one woman from Peacemaker's in it, and she's great. I must see if I find her name. I think she's one of the people that works for. It was the one African American woman. What's her Danielle Brooks? She plays what's her name? Abadeo in Peacemaker.
Oh, yeah.
She was great in it. Like everyone's a lot of fun. It is like you're not getting a lot. There's Jennifer Coolidge is in it for some silly reason. But it's got enough of like Jared Hess DNA in it that there's a lot of like sort of silly, awkward humor.
Yuck.
That really worked for me. Vance just loved how Minecrafty it was. It was a lot of fun. It's an hour and 40 minutes. It was, I would take my kids to see it again. So your mileage will vary based on whether you need to entertain children or if you have any affinity for Minecraft. But what's funny,
I feel like I will watch it when it shows up, when I can get it for the Plex. I feel like now I'm more interested in watching it than before.
Have you heard the stuff that they're the warnings they're issuing to movie theaters about this movie?
No.
So there is like a trend going on where there's a scene in the movie where Jason Momoa fights this. It's like a little baby zombie on top of a chicken.
I've seen the TikToks on it. Yeah.
So people like, apparently that mob is very rare. This chicken, a zombie chicken rider baby combo. Like it's very rare to find in the game. People are intentionally otherwise losing their mind when it shows up on screen and they're like throwing popcorn and screaming and doing
annoying.
People are like that. Like there, people are like, don't fuck this theater up because like it's becoming, I guess, some sort of trend on the, it didn't happen in the theater I was in.
You can blame TikTok. That's fucking irritating. I mean, it's fine. People can have fun at the movies, but like, why has everybody got to make things into like a fucking spectacle and trash a theater? Like, that's annoying as shit.
Well, that's why TikTok is awful. So
it's great, but it has its moment. It's really just the fucking the kids, the Gen Zers out there. They ruin everything. This is Old Man the Podcast.
Shake your fist. But no, that's everything I watched. Alec.
I watched 19 things.
For real? 19 things?
No, not 19. It's only 10.
How many were Oxygen or whatever the, what's the Lifetime?
You know what it is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hold on, I gotta count. 1, 2. Well, a lot of them are on Tubi.
Nice. Oh.
A lot of these are on Tubi now. So first we'll go with the animal ones I watched. One was called Sharkbait, which was not very good.
Sharkbait?
These people stole two jet skis and drove them out to the middle of the ocean and crashed them into each other. And then a shark slowly picks them off one by one.
But there's only two of them.
There's four people on two jet skis.
Got it.
Two on each jet ski.
Did they intentionally run into each other? Like, was that part of the plan?
Just okay. Idiot. College kids. And then one of the female jet skiers finds out that the other female jet skier slept with her boyfriend. So there's tension there, but they all end up getting eaten, so it doesn't matter. Sharkbait was not good. Now the other animal, the other creature feature, if you will, Methgator. Methgator fucking rocked.
Methgator?
Yep. Is this
their answer to Cocaine Bear?
I would say it's almost as good as Cocaine Bear. It is.
I loved Cocaine Bear.
Fucking absurd, and it's hilarious, and everybody's so fucking like. I don't know that I've ever seen worse acting in an actual like feature movie, but it's so good. It's so funny. This alligator is like the shark from Jaws 4. It can just track people everywhere, even around like waterways, and not quite halfway around the world like in that movie. But
okay,
it's pretty insane. But I loved it. I loved it so much. Yeah. We started trying to put together other random animal drug pairings, but none of them came up as good as Methgator.
Methgator is pretty. Oh wait, so in the search engine, you were just putting drugs and animals and see what would come back. Oh,
we were just making up our own. Methgator popped right up on Tubi. Apparently, I added it to my Tubi list at some point. But
oh shit.
It was still.
Wait. What other? I'm just curious. What other combos did you try? Just to see if we have a pitch meeting here.
I can't remember what we came up with. Like heroin aardvark. That's not good.
Not bad.
I would just lay around. I wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't be like...
That's true. I would just kind of...
Heroin heron might work a little better. But
heroin heron's not bad.
Still, just it's not as... Not as action-packed of a movie. A lot of just laying around and taking it up the butt.
That is what happens.
Well, that's what happened in that one movie. The other one.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, that one.
More like Requiem you guys for what I Cream. Bet.
If it wasn't the first heroin movie, it was the other heroin movie.
It was, yeah.
So I watched a duology starring Danica Geller.
Who is that?
I think it's Danica Geller. Danica McGeller, maybe? She was Winnie Cooper on The Wonder Years.
Oh, yeah.
But she had a duology. The first one's called The Wrong Woman, where she gets accused of assaulting a sex worker that is sleeping with her husband. And she goes to jail for that, and she ends up learning the law to get herself off because her lawyer is Jerry from Parks and Rec, and he's incompetent as a lawyer. Yeah, it's really funny seeing him show up and stuff. And that one was okay. The sequel, Mommy, I Didn't Do It, where her daughter is accused of murder, and she has to save her from going to jail for murder. That was much better. Because this daughter is the worst. Like, the mom is, like, trying to keep her from going to jail for the rest of her life. And the daughter is still keeping details of, like, whatever happened that night from her. Mm. Because she's afraid she'll be mad at her. She's like, bitch, you're going to go to jail. Like, tell me what happened. It's really funny. It's hilarious. Fatal Acquittal. That's the next one. Starring Denise Richards and Patrick Muldoon.
Oh my God, what an all-star cast.
As Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers Reunion. Reunion. Yes. And that one was really bad. But in one of the opening scenes, Patrick Muldoon is driving his sister-in-law home after she got off of a murder charge for murdering her husband. And they're driving a Range Rover, but they took the R off, so it's just Range Over. I guess they couldn't get the licensing rights to use Range Rover in their movie.
They should have just committed just an Ange Over.
That was pretty funny. Prisoner of Love. I can't remember what that one is. Prisoner of Love. Yeah, I'll have to leave that on. I'll have to ask Stacey what that one was about. I can't remember what that one was. The Wrong Babysitter, where... what's her name? Daphne... the princess the princess from Spaceballs. She starred in it.
Wild.
Funny, she doesn't look Drewish.
Her and her daughter live together. Her husband was killed 2 years ago in an investigation about kidnappings. She leaves her daughter with their neighbor while she goes to an art show in San Francisco. And it turns out the neighbor is actually the orchestrator of the kidnappings. And promptly kidnaps the daughter and set up her husband's murder and did all this. It's been living there for years. Just making sure that she doesn't find out about them instead of just leaving. Oh boy, four more. So a few weeks ago, I talked about Stalked by My Doctor, which stars Eric Roberts.
Yes.
So we watched the first one and the fourth one of that by accident. And then this past weekend, we watched 2 and 3. And like, I wish he would make more of these movies because he's just insane. Like, when you look up his IMDb and look at his movies, he has no joke, like 100 movies that haven't been released yet. Like, apparently, I was looking on like Reddit and shit. Apparently, he has like a $10,000 fee to be in a movie. And he just churns out as many as he can.
Well, he's popped up in a few things that we've watched on the show. Like, remember, he was in that Randy Orton Condemned movie that we watched. And he's,
I think
Condemned
he's shown two up, or three. Two or three.
He showed up on a few things that we watched. So his rate, like you said, is clearly pretty low. It's just knocking these things out on a weekend.
Yeah, he should have been in Cosmic Sin.
God, Cosmic Cinch. That's a blast from the past.
Watched the last movie was The Psycho She Met Online. starring a woman I don't know, but her husband was played by Matthew Lawrence.
That's Joey Lawrence's brother, right?
Yeah, he was in Boy Meets World, and wasn't he in Money Plane?
He was. I was just about to say yes. He was in Money.
All the Lawrences, were in Money Plane.
you can bet on a what was he? You can bet on a guy fucking a crocodile. Money Plane. Yeah. What is the
Rumble?
The Rumble. That fucking movie.
I love like how all these movies have like. Just the there's no nuance to the title. Like it's just as advertised.
Yeah, you know what you're getting.
You know precisely what you're getting.
And that one, a woman, her husband gets in a car accident. Matthew Lawrence gets in a car accident. She needs to make extra money, so she rents out two of her rooms as like an Airbnb. One of the rooms gets rented out by her secret sister, who she didn't know she even had, and she's slowly trying to ingratiate herself into her life, but doesn't tell her she's her sister. It just gets more and more possessive and crazier as time goes on until she starts killing people.
Nice.
Yeah, that was not very good. And the last thing I watched is actually a real thing.
You watched a real movie.
Is it weird
going back to real stuff after you watch all that? You're like, oh, you can actually act. There's like production value.
Sometimes they can
act. Well, yeah, sometimes. True.
It's a new show on Netflix called The Residence.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Giancarlo Stanton. Not Giancarlo Stanton, Giancarlo
Stanton.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Giancarlo Stanton, New York Yankees.
Not the batter on IL for the Yankees.
Yeah.
That'd be something, though.
Yeah.
Turns out he's a really good actor.
I'm sure he can act.
It stars a bunch of people that I recognize, but I don't know any of their names. Ken Marino is in it.
Nice.
A lot of people I recognize from bit roles and other things, but didn't know any of their names, really. The guy who played Clay Davis from The Wire is in it.
Yeah.
It's a miniseries where a murder occurs in the White House during a state dinner, and they bring in like a super detective who's basically autistic to solve the murder. And like it's 8 episodes, I think, and the first 7 episodes are really good, and then the last episode, for some reason, they made it in like all the episodes are like 40 to 45 minutes, and then the last episode they made it like an hour and a half long, and I'm just like, what? It didn't need to be that long, and it just felt like it was just stretching things out, which was kind of a disappointment to the end of it, because like overall we both really liked it like the whole time until that. I don't know why they drug it out so much at the end. Like,
yeah, I hate when they do that. I hate when it's like, you know, it's a miniseries. Well, you could have still cut out a couple of episodes. Like, I feel like that happens a lot with streaming shows.
Yeah. And that's everything. TJ.
I watched two things. I watched a documentary called The Queen of Versailles. It's fucking incredible.
I've seen that. Like, I've not seen it, but I've seen.
Oh, is that about the timeshares?
Yes,
I love that movie.
It's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. Like, so, and the guy. So it's the Queen of Versailles. The titular character is this wife of this guy Siegel. I forget his first name, but he just died. He died like yesterday or something. But he owned, I'm gonna forget the name of it. He owned some giant timeshare company, right?
Westgate.
Yeah, he owned Westgate Timeshares, and it was like the biggest like timeshare company in the country, maybe the world. And in the beginning of the movie, they call her the Queen of Versailles because he wants to make this house. It's like the biggest house in America. And it's based, it looks tacky as shit, but it's based on Versailles in France or Paris or whatever. Well, Paris is in France. But anyway, so the movie is just about how, like, they're just these super wealthy, out of touch people. But like all great documentaries, you can tell that it started one way. Like, it started with them wanting to document these just out of touch, rich psychopaths. But the 2008 financial crisis happens and they get fucked. And what's crazy is that, I mean, let's be honest, I don't think anybody in this room is going to disagree with this, but like, a timeshare is a fucking scam. And like, it's like the Omega landlord. Like, it's like a scammer scam, right? And the financial crisis happens. Their whole business model is based off ripping people off. Like, they literally say at one point, like, we don't care if they can afford it as long as they can fucking sign the check for like $2,000 or whatever for this rip off like timeshare. And a lot of their business was predicated on, they were partnered with a lot of like money lenders because people couldn't afford to pay for these fucking timeshares. So they'd hook them up with these fucking sleazy lending firms. So the fucking financial crisis happens. All those people fucking go under and they lose like all their fucking money because people that can't afford it can't pay it. So they go in default. And then you got this fucking guy who, with like no fucking like, no like sense of self-reflection or anything, that he's just like ripped people off his entire life and he's built his whole empire on fucking scamming people. Like, his, funny enough, like all his money was leveraged in this business, and he did what a lot of other rich people do, where he doesn't actually spend his money. He just fucking lives off of basically lending off of his investments. Like, a lot of rich people do this. They don't actually spend, that's how they get away with like
other people's money.
Yeah. They don't like actually spend like their income. They basically spend they get loans from the bank because the bank knows they'll pay it off because they're like super wealthy. It's a whole fucking scam. But anyway, they go fucking belly up. And then this wife is like still spending money like it's nothing. They live in this huge mansion. They have to fire like 30 of their fucking servants. And then they're complaining because they only got like 4 servants. And there's just like dog shit and piss everywhere in this mansion. Not the Versailles mansion, because that never got built. That was like halfway finished. They had to sell it. And it's just wild. Like, it's just a crazy documentary. They're so fucking out of touch. The mom, the main character of the movie, is a fucking lunatic because she's talking about how, like, she's like, oh, like, I love having kids. I don't know why people say having kids is such a burden. You just get a bunch of servants and they take care of them and it's great. And it's like, she says this with a fucking smile on her face, like, without, like, lady, that's fucking nuts. All their kids are fucked up. You can tell their kids are all pieces of shit because they've been, like, you know, raised super wealthy. And then the dad is like, well, they're going to have to learn how to work because I don't have any fucking money. And like, they put them in private school. It's amazing. The documentary is incredible. Like, I guess after this documentary came out, they did a reality show. And I want to watch some of that. But the movie, I can't recommend it enough. It's on the Plex. I think it's also on Tubi. But it's really good. One of the best documentaries I've seen in a long time. Like, it's incredible. I loved it.
I would watch that. I think I've watched that probably 2 or 3. I watched that and the one Behind the Curve, the one about the flat earthers.
Like, oh, yeah. I need to watch that.
Like, all the time is just part of my, like, you know, hater therapy. Like, I would watch that and just sort of enjoy my schadenfreude. Get that, my dose of watching terrible people suffer. Like, that did it for me. And the wife was just like classic gold digger. I mean, she's 30 years younger than her husband.
Well, the thing is that I thought, like, there's so many, like, I don't know, there's so many layers to the fucking movie, right? Because the husband clearly, like, is done with the wife because she's older now. And, like, at one point, so, like, this, again, I mean, there's so many moments in this movie that I was like, this movie is fucking incredible. So the husband, he keeps investing in, like, Miss America. Like, he's like, he says something in the movie that blew my fucking mind. I've never heard anybody talk about Miss America like this. But he's like, you know, back when I was a kid, I guess, you know, in the 50s, 60s, I don't know. He's like, Miss America was like the most prestigious thing a woman could get. And I used to get tears in my eyes when I saw them crown Miss America. And I was like, weird. Like, what? But anyway, there's this scene in the movie where he gets all the Miss America contestants in his house. And he's like flirting with them all in front of his wife. And it's like, ew, dude. Like, first of all, you're like 70. And like, it's
gross. Dude was born in 1935. Like,
yeah. And like,
he's a child of the Great Depression.
It's so gross because he's like, oh, you know, he tells the wife, oh, he joked with me and said, when I turn 40, he's going to trade me in for 2 20-year-olds. And it's like, that's a fucking crazy thing to say, dude. Like, and, another little tidbit on this movie, I'll move on to my next one that I thought was hilarious, is like, you know, this guy's like, all rich people do this, where they're like, oh, I started from nothing, da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, the reason he started his timeshare business is because he had a bunch of property in Florida, and some developer came to him and was like, I want to buy your properties so I can turn them into timeshares. And he's like, well, I'll just turn them into timeshare. But like, the funny thing is, he starts out by saying like he had nothing. Well, how did you get all these properties in Florida? Did you just, you know, they just fall in your lap? Like, come on, dude. Like, you did not come from.
If I remember correctly, he had orange groves, which doesn't sound like a cheap thing to start with.
Exactly. That's exactly right, guys. But again, like, it's all rich people do this, where they're like, oh, I came from nothing. But then it's like, you find out, like, you know, he had plenty of fucking money. He wasn't like, you know, a billionaire, but he had fucking orange grove money. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. It's wonderful, though. I mean, I hate fucking rich people, and it's fucking hilarious to watch rich people whine that the government isn't bailing them out, which is, it's just hysterical. They bring up Donald Trump and how he's not helping them, and it's great.
The problem is they survived out of it. Like, it would have been a lot better.
I was shocked to find out that the company still existed. It's still around. It's still a thing. So I was like, oh, that's a shame. But anyway, it's a great movie. I highly recommend it. The other thing I watched is the new Steven Soderbergh film, Black Bag, starring Cate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender. And I'll start by saying this is a movie that Tim Stambaugh would absolutely hate, because it's a spy thriller, but like, it's all talking. There's like no action in this, no like, you know, like action scenes in this movie. It's literally about five people that are all super spies. And then they find out that there's a leak in their department, and it's Michael Fassbender is like this fucking Rorschach level psycho that like, he just hates lying. Like, he's like the greatest like spy ever at determining if you're lying. So, but he's like super meticulous. So the whole movie is him trying to figure out like who this leak is. I thought it was fascinating. I loved it. I thought all the performances were great. I thought it looked really good. I thought that the movie was like written really tight. Like, it's only an hour and a half long, but it's like very, like, it doesn't waste time and it doesn't dawdle. And I really, really liked it a lot. I thought it was excellent. I said in my Letterboxd review, it's the sexy version of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, because it's that kind of movie, but it's also kind of sexy. Like, I don't know. I really fucking liked it. I thought Fassbender was fucking great in it. Like, there's this opening. The movie opens with like a dinner scene with the five characters that are basically the five characters at the whole movie. And the dinner scene's great. And the first thing you learn about Michael Fassbender's character is that he found out his dad was like a liar. And like, he basically like burn noticed his own father. And they're like, Jesus Christ, dude. Like, that's wild. And he's like, I don't like liars. And they're like, well, when did this happen? He's like, or how old were you when this happened? Cause they, you know, they're talking, they imply, like, oh my God, that must have been so hard on you. Like, how old were you? And he's like, I was 35. like, it's such a good movie, man. I really, really liked it. And like, we talked about this on the show a lot, but like, this is like a mid-level, like budget-wise, like, this isn't a super expensive movie, but this is like in a movie for adults. Like, this is, there's nothing like flashy about it. It's just like a really well-told story with really good acting, great direction. The color palette in this movie is really cool. It's got this very like yellowy dark tone to the whole thing. Like, it's really fucking good. I loved it. I thought it was great. It might end up, I think it technically came out last year, but if it didn't, it might end up in my top 10 already this year. I thought it was great. I really, really liked it quite a bit. Also, the guy that's like the head of their department is Pierce Brosnan, which I thought was like a cool little, that's like a little fan casting there, because you got, you know, James Bond is like the the head of the SIS or whatever. I don't know if they even name their department, but you know, they're spies. It's really good.
MI6.
They're certainly not MI6 because they don't. They. I don't know if they ever specify what country they're in, but it's something like that. You know, MI6, SIS, one of those things. It's great though. I loved it. I highly recommend it. I thought it was wonderful, and it's also short. It's an hour and a half long, so it's like you're in, you're out. It's perfect. So yeah, it's written by this guy David. I guess it's Kep, or I can't think of his last name, but I was looking through his IMDb, and his IMDb is fucking wild. So he's written like everything, and like he wrote Spider-Man, he wrote The Mummy remake. Like,
okay,
his filmography goes from like great to trash. And he wrote I Come in Peace. Do you remember that movie? We reviewed that on the show.
Movie?
What's that?
The Alien movie with Dolph Lundgren, right?
The Alien drug dealer movie. Yeah, he wrote that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wasn't it also called Dark Angel?
Yes, exactly. That's the one. He wrote that. He wrote Toy Soldiers. He wrote Death Becomes Her. He wrote Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
He wrote Carlito's Way. He wrote The Shadow. He wrote Mission Impossible. He wrote the second Jurassic Park. He wrote Snake Eyes. He wrote Spider-Man. Then he wrote fucking Crystal Skull, Angels and Demons. Like his filmography is so fucking weird. The Mummy remake. Like he wrote the last Indiana Jones movie too. Like it's wild. Like his stuff is like all over the place, but he's written literally like 80 movies. It's crazy though. I saw his name pop up and I was like, he looks familiar, and he's familiar to me because he just did that other Steven Soderbergh movie I talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, Presence, which I really liked. He wrote that too. He works with Soderbergh a lot because he wrote Kimmy too, which Soderbergh did a few years ago. But yeah, it's wild. Like it's wild to look at the thing. And you're like, shit, you wrote Jurassic Park and Spider-Man. That's fucking insane. Like, you know what I mean? Toy Soldiers. I Come in Peace one hit me the hardest. I was like, he wrote I Come in Peace. That's fucking insane. I love that movie. But yeah, big, big, big recommend for Black Bag. Excellent, excellent movie. So that's all I watched. So let's get into Crying Freeman.
So full disclosure, I watched this movie once and I was really sleepy in the second half of it. So then I watched the second half a second time and it's still bonkers. So I have like the synopsis over here to guide me along. But this movie is all over the place. So let's just get into it. I think
so, the movie, full disclosure, I watched this movie twice. I watched it because I watched it the first time and then I felt like since we took a week off, I was like, well, I should jump back in and watch it again to refresh my memory. Yeah, so I watched this movie two times, and I enjoyed it both times quite a bit.
So the movie opens, there's some sort of weird plot that I still don't completely comprehend about. So Mark Dacascos is Yo, he's like the main character. He is in real life married to the female lead of this movie.
Hilarious because they have like no chemistry.
Your name is Emu O'Hara, which is not a name that you name people.
Well, it is important to point out that this was based off a manga, so like that is a very manga name. Emu O'Hara is like, we need somebody that sounds European. I don't know, Emu O'Hara.
So. Yeah, so Emu is our narrator for this thing. She's talking about how her dad got murdered or something, and she lives in a mansion or something, and she's out painting a landscape when all of a sudden Mark Dacascos and his boy are like stomping through the greens, and they kill a Yakuza dude like in front of her while she's painting. Yes. And then that leaves like a mark on her. So she starts painting the crying Freeman.
Real quick, I need to ask, because you are our resident ballistics expert.
Yeah. Oh, dude, what's the gunplay in this game, in this movie, made me so upset, but go ahead.
Deal, is that a real gun that he uses, that weird ass?
All of the guns are real because I had to look them up.
And
I went to the Internet Movie Firearm Database and confirmed what they were. It was like
I've never seen a pistol like the one that Mark
I think the front uses. End was still there. No, yeah. It's like a, it was a, if memory serves, it was like a Taurus semi-automatic. I'll bring it up, but it's. I did go to the Internet Movie Gun Database.
Nice.
Yeah, I was like, "What in the world is that?"
Also, they have like the funniest, like very comic booky kind of thing where it's like, "Oh, we gotta get rid of the evidence." So he puts like a fucking little bomb in the gun that it makes the gun explode.
Right. Like he like turned like his, and that comes back later. Like he loads yes. him, like where the magazine would be. He puts basically like a high explosive. But yeah, that is a modified Taurus PT-92CS.
Yeah.
Internet Movie Firearms Database.
It's pretty wild. Like it looks like a fake gun. I was like, why does it look like that? Why didn't they just give him a regular gun? But whatever. It's memorable. I'll give it that.
It is. We're talking about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he kills dude. He's like, hey, painter lady, my name's Yo. And then she's like, that's cool. I'm going to go back to Canada and paint you. Meanwhile, we're introduced to like an Interpol detective, I guess. Like my man has jurisdiction everywhere, and he is trying to help sort of mediate this investigation because the kid who got killed was like the son of a Yakuza guy, and this is going to kick off a war between the Chinese triad. And so there's this Chinese group, the Sons of the Dragon. And then there is a Japanese clan. It's called the Hakushina, I believe, society. And so there's Tokyo is about to explode. No, it's there's this guy is like, he's kind of playing both sides. He's not really, I don't know if he's really, he turned out to be a dirtbag, and he's got Radon Chong as his partner. Anywho, they're like, listen.
Funny enough. So that guy, I'm sure you guys noticed, but that guy, I guess, was too Canadian or French for this movie. So
they ADR'd him.
All his lines are dubbed over by Ron Perlman.
I didn't know that.
Because when I saw this movie, when I looked it up, they're like, oh, Ron Perlman's in it. And I was like, he's not in this movie. But then like I was like listening to that guy's voice. I'm like, oh, they redubbed, they David Proust him. Like all of his lines are redubbed by Ron Perlman.
Like I could tell he was ADR, but I could not tell that he was that was Ron Perlman. Also, I made a mistake where I didn't have the subtitles on. There were scenes that were in either Chinese or Japanese, and I was like figuring it out by inference. I was like, I guess.
I turned the subtitles on. You have to turn the subtitles on.
So anyway, this guy is like, hey, listen, here's the deal. the Japanese folks are going to be mad about this, and this is the work of the Freeman, and he was like the son of 108 murdered Buddhist monks, and he's part of their dragon situation, and they can't let anybody live. So he's going to go after this broad because she saw his face, and that's not allowed. And they're like, all right, bet we're going to get revenge on his ass by way of her.
And our thread has already gotten killed, right? Mako hasn't died yet. Mako is the connecting fiber from Conan. He plays the Yakuza boss that gets got.
Well, he's about to get got because they're like, they leave the meeting to like go attend his son's funeral.
Fucking scene is insane.
And then, oh boy, like fucking Iron Chef America puts on this wild ass mask. Like, I couldn't tell if something magical was going to happen. Like, he puts on this mask that is clearly alarming to look at. Like, I didn't know if like some sort of, because in the beginning there's like this digital dragon that goes on. Yeah. I didn't know if there was going to be mysticism.
Bro, that CGI dragon over the fucking title credits looks so shitty.
I was like, maybe he's going to put on this mask and this is like some sort of like voodoo is going to happen. It's going to make him look like something else. Like it's going to be like a Mission Impossible reveal. No, it's just him running around in this mask that would set everyone. It's drawing more attention to you than it's doing anything. And then they just gunplay. Like just everyone gets murdered. Like it is the body count in this movie.
People are jumping in front of the mob boss to like get shot. And like it's fucking incredible. And,
like, he's got his boy like Ka is like up on the roof with like a sniper rifle.
Yeah.
And so they obliterate this
blowing up everywhere. Like it's just insane. And this is all like broad daylight.
this is like on a Tuesday afternoon at like 2 p.m. So that all happens. And then they're like, well, we still got to make sure that this lady gets involved. So now they go to her mansion where her father, who was murdered, was murdered. And so she's hanging out there. And then Yo shows up because he's the crying Freeman. And he's like, hey, your body is changing my ways. So I'd like to have sex with it. And they're like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So they do that. And then like, some semi-mystical like Yakuza members show up to like ruin that, and then a fight ensues, and like one dude catches a knife in the back, and Radon Chong gets knocked out, and the Interpol guy is just wandering around the woods, and then
because I don't know if I'm losing the plot a little bit, but have they revealed that Yo is hypnotized yet?
That's the turn. So now Emo O'Hara catches a hot one. Instead of finishing her off, Yo and Ka or whatever, like you're going to be okay. Say the fucking words. Like, take her to the hospital, right? Which, like, defies the Freeman code. Like, the Yakuza's pissed. So then they drop her off at the hospital. There's some sort of, like, her like housekeeper shows up and body doubles for her so she can escape. And then Yo sets up like a fake passport and buys her like a plane ticket to go to Japan.
Do we miss the part where he sneaks his gun in by like putting clay in his, he brings a box of clay into the airport. And he's like, oh, I'm a potter. And then the clay, he's got the guns encased in the
No, that was earlier. I forget when that happened. But he is a potter, which we find out later. So anyway.
He actually is a potter.
Like, that's a weird cover story, but it's also the truth. So now.
Also, that suitcase would weigh like 100 pounds.
Heavy as shit. It would be so heavy. Like, I don't know if you've ever picked up a block of clay, but like, if you had a 3 foot by 2 foot by 6 inch block of it.
But he's anyway. Like a superhuman. So I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
So now, okay. So the Yakuza then, like, they go all and they go hard in the paint on. I can't tell if it's an underground rice factory. I don't know what's happening in this wet factory that the triad is running, but they just kill everybody, like almost. Oh, yeah. And then they're like send a message to your boss that it's on between us. So the Yakuza and the triad they're beefing hard, right?
Yeah.
I still don't know. I don't know what's happening in this factory. I don't know. Who knows? I don't know if anyone knows. So now the crying Freeman sent for Emu O'Hara to show up to Japan. And at this point, the movie takes a turn because you're like, all right, now what? We find out that Yo was a potter. He was a potter. He just made fucking pots, right? And he had he was living the high life of as he was flying as close to the sun as you can as being a potter. And he's at his art gallery debut. And he witnesses a man just get stabbed in the middle of the art gallery. He has no connection to this man, but the man locked eyes with him. And then he uses his photographic memory to run it back on what he saw. And the man had stashed some film in a pot of his. So he then developed the film to find out that the film depicted pictures of some dude who we don't know who he is being like a tortured and abused, but that brought to him the attention of like a sea witch hag person who then like absconds with him and then puts them in like a Shiba statue that's holding him in like a firm embrace.
Yeah.
And that
statue was fucking also DeCostas is butt ass naked, which is great.
He's so naked.
He's naked several times in this movie also. Like
so then this witch woman she acupunctures him into being a hypnotized assassin.
Yes.
And then he flower stabs some mafia boss because that guy, this scene is what sold me on the movie. Like I was kind of with the movie until now. This scene, Mark DeCostas walks into this Italian restaurant.
Oh my God. With
flowers. He's walking past the bodyguards. He addresses the mob boss. He stabs dude in the chest with his stiletto. Hold on.
He literally just walks up and he's like, so and so sent me. And they're like, oh, okay.
Is that the flowers are for the lady? And then, like, there's an argument between the mob boss and his mall about who sends flowers, right?
This fucking guy, he looks like a fucking hitman and he's got some flowers. He doesn't look like that guy that would come up to you in every bar in Fells Point and be like, look, rose for the lady, rose for the lady.
No, he looks like the cleanest. He's either a hitman or a gigolo. Like, those are his
fucking
two
John
options.
Wick. Like, what are you doing? Like, and he just let him up to the fucking guy. Like, yeah, that's fine. Also, the guy they cast as like the Italian mob boss is so fucking hilarious. Like, just like, what's going on here? Come look.
These are Stanzos. So yeah. So
they're nice.
They're nice. So he gets stabbed in the chest. Then Yo turns around and he grabs like a bottle of Patron, throws it at a pizza oven, which erupts into fire. It lights the two henchmen on fire, but then he grabs what I think was a spatula or a pizza server.
Yes.
And then or a gardening trowel, and then he just stabs these guys to pieces. Anyway. Bro,
he ultra kills these guys. They're already dead. They're already burning to death.
So dead. Like, yeah, it's a brutality. Like,
it's literally like it's like style points in Devil May Cry. Like they're just flailing and dead, and you just keep hitting them.
Yeah, if this was Killer Instinct, I would have put the controller down halfway through. I've been like, this isn't cool. So now, next thing he knows, he wakes up attached to the fucking statue again. They're like, oh, we didn't think you would live. You've got the Freeman in you. We're going to tattoo you up, and you're going to work for us forever as our hypnotized assassin. But your curse is you wake up sad about what you did every time.
It's not really. I feel like they don't really do a great job at illustrating why he's crying. In the comics, he's crying because he's like there's still a part of him in there that like understands.
He's
like
witnessing himself do it.
Yeah, and that's why he's crying. But like it's there, but like it's not really. They don't really flesh it out very well. It just looks. And every time they show him crying, it's just like if you look at the movie cover, like it looks so bad. Like it just looks so stupid.
So Emu is learning all about this in like his secret temple base in Japan.
Yes.
And then he's also, like,
all right. It's important to point out that the pacing in this movie is so fucking weird because all the shit Gog just talked about is like a huge flashback that happens like in the middle of the movie.
Like,
oh, it's like, I don't know about you, but like the first time I watched this, I was so fucking confused at like the timeline of what's going on because you haven't even gotten into like the crooked cop and the weird,
we're about to get there.
Yakuza boss that he like rapes, but then she likes it, and it's like, what is going on? Like,
So as part of the hospital escape, Radon Chong gets exploded, and so the crooked cop is now still chasing him all over Japan. I think the Sons of the Dragon are like, hey, dude's going rogue, we got to handle this at some point. And like the Sea Witch is like, I guess we'll deal with that when we have to. Meanwhile, we've got to kill this Yakuza boss, young guy who's trying to take over and do whatever. So somehow there's like some, and this is where I needed the subtitles on. There was some sort of intrigue that happens that gets Yo and Ka into the Yakuza mansion to have a meet and be like, hey, we work for you now. Hey, bro, we honor you.
This scene whatever. Rocks.
Meanwhile,
drinks the
crooked cop has just met with the same group and then goes off and about with the Yakuza boss's wife, and she tries to frame him up for rape, but then it just happens anyway because dude's like, well, if I'm going to get blamed for it, I might as well go for it. And then
he says, if I'm gonna like lose, I'm at least going to enjoy the spoils. I'm like, Jesus Christ, brother. Like, good Lord.
But then she like seduces him into being like, hey, I want to take over the Yakuza. Help me position myself to do so.
Yeah. You find out that like the whole, like again, the problematic nature of this plot just keeps getting worse because you find out that she was actually the mastermind of this whole thing. And it's like
the whole thing somehow. Right. But then there's a scene. So in this meetup scene, him, Yo and Ka take drinks of liquor and then they just like, it's like real tense. And then they start spitting Karnov fireballs at people. Like people get lit on fire. The entire room erupts in gunfire. There's several times where a shotgun gets shot without pumping it once.
Also, this is like commando rules. This makes no sense how they're never hit with gunfire because they're surrounded by guns.
It is so casual. They're just real casual about it. They're doing their gun kata. Like the Yakuza guy gets lit on fire and then they pin him to a wall with a knife and they're like, hey, jackass, tell Satan we said hello. They stick C4 in his pants, and then as they're leaving, I guess the Yakuza guy, I guess Ka pulls his gun on the Freeman, and he's like, I gotta kill your ass now. And then the Yakuza guy kills Ka, and then he explodes. I don't mean he explodes, like parts of him.
Yeah,
leave. Like he is obliterated, right? And then like the crooked cop's there, and for some reason the Yakuza wife is upset at this part, and I don't know why, because isn't this all going to plan?
I don't understand.
So then Yo retreats back to his secret temple base, and then the secret temple base is assaulted by, I think, the dragons first. And he dispatches all of them. Like there's like a Buddhist temple stone thing, and he opens up, it's a wall of guns, and he flips 3 10-amp circuit breakers, and that sets the statue into countdown mode. Right. And then gunplay, everyone just gets shot to ribbons. Emu is there for some reason. And then like halfway through, the Yakuza shows up. And then we switch to knife play. And it's just sword, sword, swords. He does this thing where he like, at the end, he like throws the dagger that he killed the mob boss up in the air. And he catches her in the chest. He's like, listen, if I pull that knife out, you're going to bleed to death. But I'll let you live, but you're going to say that here's what happened this day. There was a big old fight and the Freeman and Emo O'Hara are dead. And we're just going to fade off into the sunset. And she's like, fuck you. I ain't doing that. He's like, all right. And he just yanks it out of her. And she's like, never mind. He's like, I was like, is he going to plug her back up with the knife? Like what's the play here? So like the Yakuza next thing you know, she's just got like wrapped with like half a shirt. So then the Yakuza boss lady is alive. And the Interpol guy, who I guess is now her lover, are alive.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the crying Freeman and Emu O'Hara are walking off in the sunset, and the Interpol dude's like, I didn't promise you shit, and then was about to like zap him in the back, and then Yakuza boss lady is like, but I did, and she shoots him, and that's the movie. Like,
that's it. Yeah, that's the fucking movie.
This movie is bonkers.
It's so insane,
and the body count is through the roof.
Oh Gox, just so you know, what's her name, Emo O'Hare and Mark Dacascos, they met on set and then they got married, so they met during making this movie.
That's what did it. So like
yeah, it's
this movie's like Alec, your thoughts?
Hold on. No, you got to phrase it right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got it. Alec, was your favorite part the pottery?
There you go.
I didn't care for the pottery. I liked just seeing him bust open the clay.
Yeah, that was pretty in the back of a car, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah. Just popping guns out of clay. I didn't know clay had lead in it. You wouldn't be able to x-ray through it.
Yeah, I mean, what? Like, yeah, that really makes absolutely no sense.
This was pre 9/11. That was a freaking
true.
It was a free for all in our airline system then.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely. You could do some things. Used to be
smoking
a proper
on airplanes.
You used to be able to bring 300 pound suitcases of clay.
Yeah.
Oh God.
It's not the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh, you know, fun with
not,
it.
Not the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh man. Let me just say that, you know, back in the old days of this show, years ago now, we used to like seek out like bad movies, right?
Yeah.
And we've discovered that there is a world of difference between a bad movie, like you know, what was that, like District of Vengeance or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like, we've watched plenty of movies that were bad, but then not entertaining. This, to me personally, this is a terrible movie, but it is wildly entertaining. Like, it's,
I think
so
we used to
bad.
Say, if you're going to be bad, at least be confusing.
Well, it's so confusing. But it's also like full of action. Like, it's never boring because it's just, there's always somebody's getting shot. There's a woman painting somebody for some fucking reason. They forget about Emo O'Hara for like 90% of the movie, and then she just kind of shows up and it's just like, wait, why are you here?
It is
a narrator for some fucking reason.
It's so not boring and confusing. I had to go back and be like, is that what I saw? Because like, this is all. And
I mean,
it sounds like you read the manga.
I read a very brief, a little bit of the manga. The guy that created this, I might have said this last week, but the writer of this manga, he also created Lone Wolf and Cub, and he created Lady Snowblood. And I've read a lot of that, but I've only read a little bit of Crying Freeman. The art in Crying Freeman is really, really good. But I've only read like a handful, but it's like this. It's a lot more, the storylines aren't nearly as convoluted as this. It's a lot more like very brief and he does a lot. It's a lot more like it's structured a lot like Lone Wolf and Cub, where like the Crying Freeman like is put into a situation and then kill somebody and then it's over. Like, it's very quick, like very brief, very episodic. So I can't really speak to, they changed a little bit of, like, I think the name of the clan in the manga is called like the 500 Dragons, which sounds way cooler. Mm. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man, like it's goofy in the, like, the best possible way for me. Like, I had a smile on my face like the whole time. Cause it's just, it's like, it's the best kind of bad movie for me, because like the whole thing is played like super earnest. Like, they don't know they're making a bad movie. Like, they're trying their ass off, but it is the silliest fucking thing. And it's written by like cocaine. Like, the writing of this movie is just out of control. Like, it's wild. But yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before we get into five knuckle shuffles? God, she started the show early and we're still going to go to 8 o'clock.
What are you going to do? It's all good.
Thank God Mark Dacascos, his career has taken him from the highs of Crying Freeman to the highs of being a token racist stereotype on America's what's that cooking show? God damn it.
Iron Chef America.
And
when you watch that, I love that show, but he puts on an accent, which is probably the worst.
Oh,
part.
No. Does he really?
It's real bad.
Oh, God.
Like, until this movie, I thought he was just Asian. I didn't.
Yeah, he's Hawaiian.
I thought he just had an accent. I didn't realize that he's just putting on, like, stereotypical Asian accent.
No, he's like.
Have you ever seen that episode of Futurama where they have the Iron Chef?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's got the Asian guy who's supposed to be, like, the chairman or whatever. And he's doing like the thickest, deepest, most racist Asian voice on that. It's close to that.
Oh, like I gotta watch bad. Iron. Is Iron Shift streaming anywhere? I gotta watch it now.
Yeah, I think you can watch it. You might be able to watch it on Netflix or something.
I gotta like, watch it.
Today we're gonna be cooking with.
Oh no! Oh, oh no! I basically really got
Ken Watanabe.
Oh no! Filled with regret. We don't do that one anymore.
No, I wonder why.
No, I didn't care for John Wick 3. That was 3, right? With Mark Dacascos, yeah. He plays a bad guy. I did not care for John Wick 3, but I thought he was really good in it. I thought he was like the best part of that movie. Like, I thought he was great.
I need to revisit 3. I also did not. I think I was like mixed. I didn't hate it as much as I think me and Sean liked it more than you two.
I really
enjoyed 4.
I still hold the same. I've watched it recently, actually. I still have the same problem with it where I feel like it doesn't do anything. Like the movie is at the same place at the end as it was in the beginning. It feels like a nothing burger. Like, and I feel like they set it up. I mean, I'm just revisiting stuff we talked about already on that movie, but I feel like the first two movies set it up for like a trilogy. And then like, oh, these things make way too much money, so we got to keep going. And that's what that third movie feels like. It's just like, oh, we got to keep milking this fucking thing. Does anybody have any interest in the spinoff movie that's coming out this year with Ana de Armas? I don't think it's going to be any good. Not because it's female led. Don't even start. That's not me. I just don't think the movie looks very good. But
because the lady's in charge.
It's not because it's woke. Yeah. I love violent ladies. Kidding? They're the best.
And you love Ana de Armas. I know that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Ana de Armas is great. I can't see her in a leading role. I mean, I watched that horrible Marilyn Monroe movie she was in. I mean, that wasn't her fault.
She was a sort of a leading role in Knives Out.
I hate that movie. And no, she wasn't. How was she a leading role? That was an ensemble.
It was an ensemble, but she was one of the most more important characters.
I mean, that's not really leading. I don't know.
Fine.
I mean, she's a good actress, but I don't. I just want her as Joy. That's all I want.
Yeah. Well, any role that was given to Gal Gadot, Ana de Armas could have done better.
Oh, that's not even a question. Of course. Anyway, let's get into Five Knuckle Shuffle. Alec.
Two.
Oh, come on.
God damn.
Come on, man. Come on.
Nope. Maybe if they had it set in a better place. The Pacific Northwest is a beautiful landscape to look at, but
I'm really glad you brought
boring,
that up.
Bland, like, colors. Everything's so gray and boring.
You're not wrong. Also, is it weird to anybody else that this movie that's clearly supposed to take place in either China or Japan is like, oh, in Canada? It's like, what the fuck? Like, why is this in Canada? Like,
it's cheap to film in Canada.
I know that, but at least like you can just fake it and say it's in fucking Japan. Like, it's so weird that it's like they took all their like shit and put it in Canada. It's like, why are they there? Like, it's very odd. I know logistically why it's shot in Canada, but it's weird to set the movie in Canada.
Mm.
Anyway, 2, huh? That's harsh. I don't know, man. I'm sorry you didn't have fun with this one. I had a blast.
No, did not have fun. No fun had.
Aww.
And y'all are going to pay for it next week.
Oh. Mm. All right. What, are we going to watch Southland Tales again?
No, nothing that good.
All right. You did Southland Tales.
I didn't even see Southland Tales. I actually was a movie. Oh wait, did we watch that on the show?
Yeah,
hold on.
Oh, twice, wait. I think
we watched it twice on the show.
Yeah, so that was a movie when I was younger. I was really excited to watch, and I never did. And then you guys said it was so bad, I never did until I had to for the show.
Awful.
And it was not very good. You were right.
No, it's very bad. It's very bad. It is my least favorite movie of all time.
I'm giving Crying Freeman a 8.
Right. That's right. Absolutely.
This movie is not good, but I had a blast with it. Like, is like, it's bad, but it's like,
it's terrible.
It's like fun bad for me. Like, like, I don't know how many times, like, I gave it a what hell yeah what. It is Like the fight in the Italian restaurant when he exploded the Yakuza guy into like it was like Rise of the Triad Gibbs like of like parts of people exploding. Like it is the movie's bad and it's poorly acted and it's not well shot.
Everything is the editing is poor, the storytelling is poor, like everything is
believes in itself. It's trading on confidence and it's trying hard. And so you know, I'm gonna give it an 8. It's like Showdown in Little Tokyo. It's like it is one of those movies just like it's like what the hell did I just watch? And I feel like you can, if you've seen other people that have seen the movie, you can talk about it in such a way. People, this is not one of those movies that I will forget. I will remember Crying Freeman for the rest of my days. So that has to be worth something. Sure. And it's bananas. So, it tickled my fancy. TJ.
This movie is also an 8 for me, dog. I fucking love this movie. I am shocked that in like bad movie circles, like this movie doesn't get talked about. I heard about this being one of the more fun like manga adaptations, and I totally agree. This movie is batshit insane, and like it is from the start. I mean, the first thing you see is somebody getting murdered as some woman is painting on like a cliffside for some fucking reason. Like, everything about this movie is nuts, and like none of the characters think very hard, and like all the murders take place like, you know, usually, you know, if you're an assassin, you're going to work under the cover of darkness. Not this fucking movie. This guy shoots people in broad daylight in front of municipal, but actually it wasn't even a municipal thing. It was a fucking police station. He shot him in front of a police station.
They were giving a statement. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. There's like cameras around and shit. They're just shooting everybody. The fucking, everything is during the day. Like what, like we talked about the mob boss assassination, his strategy is just like, he plays the way I play video games sometimes where I just frustrated and I just rush in and kill people. Like, I don't like, I'll figure it out. Like the Mark Dacascos is kind of great in this movie. Like, I think like, as far as like the stunt work and the, like the fighting and the shooting, I thought all that was actually done pretty well. Like, obviously like the movie, like, is not well acted and it's generally not like well directed, but I thought that like it was a like, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory kind of movie, because like you could tell the director had like no interest in like actually telling a coherent story, but he really wanted to do these like insanely violent like shootouts. Like I know Goggs is pretty familiar with like early 90s John Woo movies, but like I feel like Christopher Gantz saw Hard Boiled and was like, I want to make that. And that's this.
He wants flipping. He wants diving over couches. He wants,
but this is
all the,
this
he is, wants glass to shatter everywhere. Yeah.
This is Timu John Woo all day long. Like it is so John Woo, like in the best way. Cause it's kind of incompetent. Like I love this movie. I could definitely see myself watching this movie again. I had a blast, and I wish like more movies were bad in this capacity. Cause I feel like, you know, now, you know, we get fucking Meth Gator or whatever. And it's like, or not, you know, I'm trying to think of another, like Shark Exorcist. You know what I mean? That's a bad movie, but it's not like fun. This is bad. Cause it's like, I feel like movies nowadays, when they try to be bad, they're like too self-aware and they're too winky to the audience. Like this movie is done completely straight face.
This is like this guy earnestly was trying to make a good film. Like this
This guy was trying to make another John Woo movie and can't. And that is somehow more charming than like most other movies for me. I loved it. I wish there was a Crying Freeman 2. Like, I love this movie. I want to watch more of this character do ridiculous shit. I want weird, like again, there's, like, God's talked about it, but there's this weird, like, mystical Chinese magic woman that pops up out of nowhere, and there's this torture device thing that looks like a Shiva statue. It's amazing. And it's just absolutely amazing. There is just, like, very odd, like, there's a lot of like sexuality in this movie that feels completely out of place, and like I don't know, man, this movie is fucking wild. Like, loved it. I loved every minute of it. Like, from jump, too. Like, I was like, as soon as the movie started, I was like, oh, I'm going to love this. Like, this, the guy's putting bombs in his guns to blow up. And, oh, yeah. No, I fucking love this. And again, going back to the broad daylight, he shoots that other guy literally just in the middle of the day in a park. Like, could they not shoot at night? Did they not have fucking lighting rigs? Like, nothing is at night. Like, this is like midsummer, the action movie. Like, everything is in broad daylight. It's amazing. I loved it. I fucking loved it. I wish Sean, I'd love to know what Sean thought of this, because this seems like something right up his alley. This feels to me like if this came out, like, this feels like something Canon would have put out in the 80s. Like, it is very Canon.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I loved it. I thought it was great, and I thought it was awesome. So, yeah, that's Crying Freeman. Alec, what are we watching next week, buddy?
Oh, this has been coming for a few weeks since I was forced to watch My Dinner with Andre and Vanya, whatever, second stream. Yeah,
that one.
We're watching 2014 Godzilla.
Oh, no. Who's in that? What's the thread?
It is Kevin Ochizi.
Who is that?
He's in that movie, and he was... Which one was he in this?
His name is Kevin Ochizi.
Shimazaki. He played one of the one of the Yakuza guys. Okay, he's
the second credited actor on IMDb behind Ibu O'Hara.
He played the guy. He played the Yakuza guy.
The Yakuza boss.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was Mako's son. So he was the guy that was like the guy in the scene that you like where they shoot like fireballs. He was the one that was having the meeting. That guy.
That guy kind of ruled.
So we're watching the Garth Evans Godzilla movie, right? That one?
Yes.
Garrett
Evans. With Bryan Cranston.
Oh, God. That movie sucks. Okay.
Isn't Quicksilver also in that?
Yes. A Quicksilver's in it.
He's the lead. What's his name? Kick-Ass. Why can't I ever think of his fucking name?
He's a three-name banger. It's
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
There it is.
All right, Godzilla next week. Prepare to be bored. That's all I remember of the movie. It was boring. The first 10 minutes are really cool. I remember that.
Well, I'm excited about the...
Ken Watanabe.
It does have Ken Watanabe, and it's got Brian... I mean, it's a great movie for the show, because there's a lot of people in it.
Elizabeth Olsen, Juliette Binoche.
Yeah. Oh, we can watch.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch were in this movie too?
Yes. Yeah, there are a couple in this movie. And you'd think that he's Quicksilver because he conveniently gets to every plot point, even though it makes absolutely no sense.
Neat.
And I think we all like Rogue One, and that was Gareth Evans. So, like, now we can go back and be like, oh, yeah, he sucks.
Yeah, Rogue One rocks.
Oh, Rogue One was amazing. I love Rogue One. It killed Star Wars for me because nothing
ever loves Rogue One.
That's awesome. All right, Godzilla next week, 2014. God, it's been that long, huh? That's crazy to think about. That movie's that old. Shit. Well, we got to charge you guys next week because Godzilla is from Japan, so there's going to be a 15% tariff on next week's
show. A 15% was what we were experiencing. We were experiencing flight delays due to Godzilla-related turbulence.
That's a great joke on them. All right, everybody, that's the show. Godzilla next week, King of All Monsters. Oh, that's actually what the sequel is called, sorry. All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We get to-